Come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Welcome back, ladies and germs, to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. Every Saturday, we're coming at you right here on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Castroller, and more fine repositories of internet talk shows. You can find us on Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show, where you can reach out and talk to us, and we'll probably read your comments on air later in the show during Igor's mailbag, right before the wrap-ups. These are the internet radio superstars.
Brent.
Jenny.
Sean.
Travis.
And I'm Colin. And every week we pick a movie down the batting lineup, and tonight it fell on me. So tonight we watched Only God Forgives from, I believe, the year 2013, directed by Nicholas Winding Refn, who you may or may not know as the director of Drive. So this was the follow-up to Drive. And
Did he write Drive?
He did not. He wrote and directed this.
Now I get it.
Yeah. That was written by Hossein.
Wait, he wrote or something? Someone wrote this?
Yeah.
What happened? Where was the dialogue?
All right.
When you write something, usually there's something for actors to do.
All right. So very briefly, the movie is about a expatriate American criminal named Julian, played by Ryan Gosling, who's living abroad in Bangkok. He has a front business for his drug selling, which is like a Muay Thai. Am I saying that right?
Muay Thai
boxing establishment. His brother rapes and murders a 16-year-old girl and then is pursued by this cop named Chang. And Ryan Gosling is supposed to take care of this guy for his mother, who runs the organization. She's just a fucking monster, played by Kristen Scott Thomas.
She might be the like evilest character, the least liked character I've ever seen in a film. Like, yeah. She is just despicable.
She's a piece of work.
She's a piece of work.
Well, I mean, I guess we can start where? You want to start with a little background on the director?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, he's an interesting cat to me. And, you know, I picked this movie because I'm like obsessed with it. So and for like a number of reasons. But I think it's interesting that, you know, there's two filmmakers out of Denmark that you can talk about. There's Lars von Trier and Nicholas Winding Refn, which has got to be like a crazy amount of pressure on those guys, because you think of world cinema and you know Denmark for like two fucking guys.
Well.
Where's
is this why?
Huh?
I said, is this why? Or usually, okay.
why?
Well, are all Denmark filmmakers just? I mean, it's photography, right? But is it?
Well, I mean, when we talk about like what they're known for over there, and I'm trying to think if like I think. The guy who directed the Seventh Sign. Is the Seventh Seal? Seventh Seal. Bergman. He's Swedish, right?
Ingmar Bergman.
Yeah,
I think so. Like
Well, I mean, you know, if you look at like Lars von Trier's stuff, I mean, his stuff's like very melancholy, very depressed, very heavy. Winding Refn's stuff is like also kind of like metaphysical, heavy, you know, kind of stuff, except for maybe like Drive. Which is like the anomaly, I think, in his filmography. And again, I haven't seen the Pusher trilogy. I haven't seen Fear X. I saw Valhalla Rising, which is a Viking movie that I really liked before Drive, and didn't recognize that it was the same guy until I put it together afterwards. But Drive kind of like elevated him to a status, I think, like, you know, in worldwide cinema, where it was like, oh, hey, take a look at, you know. This was a thing, because Drive was like it wasn't like a pop culture phenomenon.
It was a critic favorite, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's people who say that it's like one of the best movies of all time.
Yeah.
You know?
Did it make any money?
It made its money back.
Yeah.
But it's definitely like
It's the best movie of all time.
Well, not the best, just one of the best. So I don't know, like how many movies are in that? You know, a couple hundred. You know,
yeah, that's an insane statement. I don't agree with that at all.
Well, I mean, what year did that come out? 2013, maybe.
Drive was like 2010 or 2011.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
I remember seeing it and thinking like it was like maybe one of the best films of the year that I had seen. Mm-hmm. It was a standout among everything else that you'd see. It seemed very original. But yeah, like I can still see the director in this, but it's just so different.
Mm-hmm. Well, Drive has like, I mean, it's a lot more of a commercial movie.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
With, I mean, I guess they're both involved with the criminal underworld.
Right. More of a straightforward narrative, I would say, in Drive than, say, this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even then, I mean, Drive subverts your expectations. Like, you know, if you're expecting, you know, in that type of mob type movie with your lone anti-hero, you know, there's going to be bigger car chases or, you know, these action moments, which Drive certainly does have, but it...
Right, it's a more low-key version of that.
Yeah, and it kind of... But they're done expertly. I mean, the movie itself, like, if you look at, like, what the filmmaker was trying to do, I think, it's, like, it's executed, like, it's one of those, like, a near-perfect movies. I mean, it's
this
done...
This one?
No, Drive.
Oh, Drive.
Yeah.
Drive.
Yeah.
Not this one.
Well, I don't even think Drive... Having your main character not emote for shit, I think is a... I think it's fucking stupid. I think it makes Drive horrible. I think it makes this horrible. Why have a dude that your brother's dead?
Just blankly staring.
Finger your pussy. It doesn't make any fucking sense. It's so fucking stupid to me. It just like screams of pretentiousness. Screams of it. It's like, well, I just don't fucking get it. I don't get it. I don't see why. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Well...
Stare. Everybody in this movie walks around like a zombie with a blank face.
Yeah.
Like it seems like such a fucking art house piece of shit. Like, I mean, cool. There's cool colors. I'll give it that. Cool photography. But does that make a fucking movie? I don't think so. It's cool photography.
I mean, that's a component in it.
That's one component.
Movie.
Yeah. But I don't think it makes a good fucking movie. And we watched the movie, so mm-hmm. I'd say, yeah, epic fail.
Well, I was thinking about that while we were watching it, and yeah. The photography is sharp and it looks good, but like it's almost like this guy, like it should be like a still photographer, you know, that like these images, they call them movies because people are supposed to move or something should happen. But like there's just these long scenes of just staring blankly. You know, and the composition is good. You know, I mean,
it felt like it froze sometimes. A few scenes, I'm just like, did the DVD freeze?
did somebody hit pause?
Yeah, it felt like it. Like going into a scene, everyone was just frozen.
Yeah.
And then
it's one of those movies where like the person will like turn their head, then all of a sudden they're like walking through somewhere, and you're just like, oh, what are they? You know, you have to, of course, get to the fact that, oh, he's thinking of something. What is he thinking of? Well, just fingering more pussies.
That's what this one has that Drive doesn't have, I think. But Valhalla Rising does. So it's like that one also is written by reference. I'm like, is this a thing? The vision quest idea or injecting like a character's... I mean, it's a vision that they're having that somehow foretells the future. In this movie, Julian early on, you know, goes to see this prostitute, Mai, who I guess he's having some type of relationship with, but it's a strange relationship where it's like she ties his hands down to a chair so she can pleasure herself. And during that, like the act of her, you know, I think it's at the moment she's coming is when he has like this vision and he sees Chang, who he hasn't met yet, like walk into the room with his sword. And this guy has like this magic sword that he just pulls out of his back, like, at various points during the movie. And it's like, where did that fucking sword come from? Like, he doesn't have a holster or anything. It just magically appears. Yeah, it comes from like within this guy.
It's not just under his shirt.
No, because you see his back. When you see his back, he's not carrying this sword, but it shows up like, you know, to, you know, punish all of these offenders, you know, anybody who sins basically in the movie, right? I forgot where I was going with it. Lost the thread.
what we were talking about, I mean, yeah, the vision quest that, mm-hmm. that these characters are going on, or maybe that's a similarity from his other films.
Well, I think that, but that's what makes this one harder to follow, you know, because you're seeing these moments where a character is like staring off at something and then you see what he's staring at and it's like, well, that doesn't match, you know, he's in the room with, you know, another character, but he's seeing this third character he should have no knowledge of. Yeah. So is that a flash forward? Is he dreaming or is this a premonition of the future? And it's like the only way that I can take it is this has to be a premonition of the future based on the way that he reacts when he does finally meet Chang.
He reacts.
When Chang comes into his the boxing gym.
Yeah.
He follows him because, you know, it's like now you've seen this guy in real life who you've seen only before in a vision. So he follows him down the street.
Well, no, the guy that actually killed his brother tells him that the cop. So he's aware of this cop that cut off his arm after he, you know, because.
Yeah, but that happens after that vision sequence happens when he's in the room with the prostitute.
But
and then there's a knock on the door or whatever, and then he goes to the door, and the guy's there and tells him, your brother's dead.
But then they take the guy that actually killed the brother. He tells him of the cop, and then when the cops come and, like, interrogate him, that's when he sees Chang or whatever fuck his name is, and then he follows him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think that's because, well, I guess you can read it either way, right?
Well, I think he just knows that that's, like, the head of the cops or whatever fuck, right? Whatever the guy told him.
Yeah, well, I guess that raises the question, are these visions, I mean, is it an omniscient, you know, from like a filmmaking or editing standpoint, is it just showing the audience something that the character might not be aware of that's going on, you know, like the flash, is that Gosling's point of view, is that Julian's point of view, or is that, you know, the just for the audience?
Well, which way does it work, or does it work, I guess, at all in the story?
I think unless this guy is like some sort of supernatural being, the cop, I think that it works better where from a filmmaking standpoint, you're showing the audience something that will connect later on, you know, with the chopping off of the hands.
I would say you're showing something that is kind of happening. You're looking at two different things happening at the same time, right? He's sitting here watching his fucking girlfriend pleasure herself or whatever the fuck. And then you're flashing to the arm getting cut off. At least to me, that's because right after the scene we're talking, that's when he finds out his brother's died. So I don't know. It's kind of like while he's sitting here watching this chick, this is when this cop is cutting his arm off of this guy. And I don't know. I think the filmmaker's just mixing it together to show you these two things happening at the same time. Not necessarily a premonition the guy's having. It's just the filmmaker flashing images.
Well, maybe, but it actually seems to happen again. There's another scene where.
Well, that was his boner talking. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's sitting in the fucking. Oh, this movie is so fucking retarded
there's
to
that,
me.
But there's a time when
he stare at his boner.
No.
And then he envisions the girl taking his hand and once again fingering her fucking.
Well, I've seen this like several times now, so I have a theory. So eventually, I'm going to come around to this.
Finger and
well,
pussy?
I think it's all predicated on the hands.
Yes,
because
he's obsessed. Like he's always staring at his hands, and there's so many shots of his hands.
Yeah,
he's fixated on it.
Because after watching this so many times, I'm like, there's got to be. Because you watch it the first time, and you're like, what in the holy hell is the motive, the reason why we're showing this guy's hands? You know,
well, he was a fighter, right? He's a tough guy or some shit, right? So his whole life is built on.
Was he a fighter?
Stupid. No, well, street kid, right? If you're going to be in that business, you're kicking ass in the street, right? So
he murdered his father with his bare hands.
With his bare hands. I think that's the key. You find this out like later in the movie.
This happened?
Yeah.
Fuck, I must have been
sleeping. I think that's the key to understanding the whole... Now, this is just one interpretation. So if you guys see something that's probably else, it. You I tell was me. Right?
That makes sense to me. Like,
that's he's got... Okay, so the first time I see him, now knowing this, that he killed his father
and that's his sin, before, and that leads to the end of the movie, and that's why they get cut off. Yes.
And so the whole way through it, he sees his hands as the key to his own personal demon or sin, right?
Yeah.
He washes his hand and there's blood on his hands. You know, you actually see it. So it's like, okay, he's got blood on his hands. What for? We find out from the...
Was that coming out of the faucet or was that just... He was just
out of the faucet.
It was coming out of the faucet, but I think it's blood supposed on to be.
Yeah.
So in order for Julian to somehow be like a real person, you know, it's like to him... the scenes, you know, when he visits the prostitute, she ties his hands down. It's like, okay, so he can't, you know,
he's not allowed
use the sinful devices, right? In his second vision with her, where she's actually taking his hand and putting her hand like in her lap, it's like she's somehow able to. I mean, how do you read that, right? It's like she's caressing his hand. It's like somehow she's accepting of it or removing the stigma with the hand, right?
Maybe.
And then – but that's just a dream. So, you know, it's like – and whether that's like something that he desires is like, you know, that I want to have a regular relationship with a woman because he's got like all sorts of issues there, which we got to come double back on.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you have like the end scene where, you know, the guy like actually cuts his hand off and it almost seems like, you know, Julian wants this to happen.
Yeah, he's presenting for it, like at least in the vision part of it.
Yeah.
I don't know because it doesn't explicitly tell us what happens in the nightclub where they're at the end. But in his vision, when they're standing in the woods and everything, he is presenting his arms to be removed.
So somehow he's going to be, you know, saved once these appendages come off, you know. And there's also, I mean, so the other thing, you know, once, you know, Chang kills, and this is, I'm sorry, we're totally into spoiler territory, but once Chang kills his mother, Julian comes in and finds the mother's corpse, and he stabs her with a sword in the stomach or uterus. I don't know what he's aiming for there.
I think that's what he's aiming for.
Hands into inside of her. And it's like, okay, so what the fuck is he trying to...
I think he's going for the womb.
So he's trying truth. To... So, well, you either read it as this is some kind of sex act with the mother. You know, if he's going... He's somehow penetrating the wound with his, you know, his hands. You can see it as he's trying to get back to the womb and become a child again and find his mother's love.
Oh, Jesus.
Or, or what's the third one?
Well, or he's cleansing his...
Yeah, and somehow transferring
the blood from the mother.
To the mother.
Yeah.
Because he's putting his evil, you know, appendage inside of her.
Right.
And she's the evil one.
Yeah. And it seems like both of their sexual deviancies stem from the mother, obviously, with the unhealthy relationship that they had growing up with her.
You're saying Billy, the brother, and Julian.
Yeah, Billy and Julian. Because early on, Billy, before he gets whacked. Yeah, like before he gets his skull crushed in, he's going around trying to fuck a 14-year-old, basically. That's what he wants to do. And he ends up with a 16-year-old and ends up murdering her. And that's not normal.
Right.
So, and then obviously Gosling with the whole, Julian, with the whole, you know, hands and the weird sexual acts and the prostitutes. And
well, it's underscored once we actually meet the mother, whose name is Crystal, I want to say. But, I mean, she's a fucking piece of work. She's this foul-mouthed, she dresses like a Barbie doll or something, right? I don't even know what you'd call that.
Yeah.
You know, and comes
she
over.
She dresses from, like a Real Housewife of L.A. or something like that. That's basically what it feels like.
And she comes over from the States, and she's just verbally abusive to everyone around her. When she finds out, you know, that Gosling didn't kill the guy who did actually murder. Let's see. The guy who killed her son, right?
Yeah.
She's disappointed in Gosling. You know, it's like because he's like, you know. Billy raped a 16-year-old, raped and killed a 16-year-old girl. And the mother's response is, well, he must have had his reasons, you know?
Yeah.
Then you find out that, like, you know, Billy was the favorite son. Gosling was always, or, you know, Julian was always jealous of him. She dresses down Julian in front of his date at a restaurant by saying that basically he's got a small dick compared to his brother.
Yeah.
Which is like, what in the holy hell kind of relationship do these people have?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's kind of set up in the scene where you meet the mother and Julian for the first time. And she, like, grabs his ass.
Yeah, she, like, gives him a hug, but it's not... Because she's sitting on the bed, and he's standing there, and she hugs him pretty close. But then her hands are all over his ass. I'm like, what the fuck?
And then after that, she's, like, stroking his arm or whatever. It's all kind of, like, leading to this idea that, like, there's some kind of weird history, weird sexual history with mother and her sons. Which is then paid off in their psychology to make them, like, you know, they're deviants. They're bent somehow because of this treatment. And it's also implied or stated, I guess, in the scene where Crystal is talking to the cops. And she says that, you know, Julian was always jealous of Billy. Billy and I had a special relationship. And Julian was paranoid and manufactured things in his mind and saw things that weren't there, blah, 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 which is her, I think, covering for the fact that she was having some kind of relationship with her kid.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, then.
So, that's the
mother. Question answered.
That's, that's their mother. But, and that's,
played by Kristen Scott Thomas. I've never seen in a role like this before.
No.
Yeah.
She's always like Gosford Park or.
Right.
Or stuff like that.
Random Hearts.
Yeah. But, I mean, the problem with her character is the problem with all of these people. I would rather see them get killed than.
They're deplorable. Every character is fucking.
Yeah. There's nobody. There's nobody to root for.
Except
nobody.
Maybe the prostitute.
Not even. No.
Well, actually, it's probably Chang, right?
Well, I thought it was, but I mean, Chang, he's pretty horrible too. I mean, he's torturing these people. He's not just getting revenge.
You heard him sing? Torturing these people.
Torturing them. But, you know, I mean, I guess if you have to root for somebody, it would be Chang.
Well, only because, I mean, I guess he's supposedly on the side of justice. He's a retired cop or something, right?
Yeah, the back of the case has him described as a figurehead of divine justice.
Well, because, he's always giving these lessons right before he kills the character, you know, how you need to be the punishments that he doles out, like with the father of the, you know, the 16-year-old prostitute that gets killed in the beginning. He's got three other kids, this guy, three other daughters, and or maybe three total, I think.
Four
total. Okay. So one was killed, and, you know, he's begging for his life from this cop, and the cop says that he's going to basically chop off his hand so that he doesn't allow this to happen to his other kids. So he never forgets his other daughters.
Why did you stop her? It's his fault that she gotten to that line of work.
Yeah.
But I wonder if that scene would have gone a different way, right? Because the setup is, you know, Billy has just killed the girl and is still in the room with the girl. So, you know, the police discover this and then bring up, you know, so Chang brings up the father and basically says, this is the guy who killed your daughter, you know.
Do what you want.
Yeah, what do you want to do? Do what you want. So he gives him, in a way, and okay, this is reading into the divine, you know, retribution or whatever thing. He gives him a choice of free will.
Yeah.
Because the father beats the, you know, Billy to death with a club, that's why he loses his hands.
I think it's still because, I mean, he asked the guy that he's aware that, I mean, he's letting his daughters be whores because they're poor.
Yeah.
He's almost, I mean, I'm not.
And that happens before, that happens before the choice, right?
When
they got him kneeling on the ground.
Yeah, right before he cuts off his hand. He knows he's going to cut off his hand because he's just saying you've made a poor choice and so you're going to lose an arm over the choice you made because, you know.
You think that would have happened even if he didn't kill?
Yeah, he's like Saw or whatever, right?
Well, because he specifically says, you know, I'm doing this so you don't forget. You don't ever forget about your other three daughters.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's It's not.
Or you had a chance to do something, and now, you know. Well, no, he said that before.
Well,
he's going to kill the guy.
I mean, I think, yeah, I would guess that even if, you know, he had just beaten the shit out of the guy but not killed Billy, he still would have lost his hand just because that's a... I don't quite know the metaphor for it, but it is. It's so he never forgets that. Because, like, he when they first bring him up to the room and he's saying that he doesn't know where his daughter is or what she was doing. And basically that he's forgotten about her, you know. But, I mean, she's obviously bringing in money, but mm-hmm. he doesn't care about it. So, basically, he's like, you know, don't ever forget that you have these three daughters and they're, you know, somebody, people you should care about or take care of, I guess. Mm. But then, because then the next scene you see him, or one of the next scenes you see him go home and you see that Chang has a daughter.
Right. Yeah. Which he seems like, those are the scenes where it sets him up as like he's a decent man, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe, I don't know. I mean, we just see the fact that he has a daughter and dotes on her or something. I don't know. He seems like maybe absentee for during the day when he's off doing whatever the hell he's sure, doing, yeah. dealing out this justice.
Yeah.
Which is also strange when you think about it, because it's like this guy supposedly isn't. Did they say he was retired in the movie?
See, I just took it as he was like, you he's know, like a detective or something, or yeah.
Yeah.
Something more.
He's always around the police.
Yeah, and he had a different uniform on. He didn't have the, you know, patrol uniforms like the other police officers did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had the white collars, and I don't know if that's his uniform or just he wore the same thing every day. This is one of those type of movies where, for the most part, other than Crystal, everybody like wears the same outfit, you know, like a cartoon character. Like mm-hmm. they I guess Gosling changes. He has his suit and his tie.
And his white shirt.
And his white shirt. Muscles. Or his black shirt.
He's got his muscles.
So he's got them. Well, all right. Well, I mean, it's because I guess for some reason, and I mean, maybe it's because of the title. When you go like, you know, the title's Only God Forgives. And it's like, well, what the fuck does that? You know, you watch the movie and you're like, okay. So are we supposed to read it as, you know, you know, everything's like a symbol, and in which case, like, is this the God character? I don't know if this is true or false, right? There are moments, though, that do kind of back it up, it seems like, because the first time that we see Chang, after he does the what played to me is like a question of free will, mm-hmm. and the guy chose poorly, while the guy is killing Billy, a little old man comes up to Chang and he's shaking and he offers him like a drink or something like that, tea, you know, tea or something. Right.
Yeah.
It always seems like there are scenes like which either underscore like an offering. They're either giving an offering to Chang or they're worshiping him in some way. Or in some cases, there's a sacrifice made to appease Chang. Mm-hmm. Right.
I feel like he's been doing this for a long time.
The arms. And he has a magical
and
knife. Magical.
And the magic.
His God sword.
Yeah. But I think another way to read it, you know, on later viewings, I'm like, is, you know, because there's a scene specifically where Ryan Gosling challenges Chang to a fight. And right before he does, the cop comes up to him and says, do you know who he is? And Gosling nods, and then, you know, do you want to fight? And they go and they fight in this, like, thing that's been built up, you know, with a lot of slow motion and this music. And Gosling doesn't land a fucking, you know, blow at all. This guy just totally obliterates him.
Yeah.
But in that moment, I'm like, and also right before that, you see, like, all the boxing kids come and kind of gather around Chang, and they bow to him or whatever the hell they do.
Oh,
and I'm like,
right.
Is it possible, right? That Chang is the fighter whose statue.
Oh, I totally
is think standing it is. In that club.
Yeah.
Like, so you know who he is. Yeah, I know he used to be, you know, and now they've got it like a bronze idol of him, right in the front room.
Yeah.
Of this club, so it's like he knows. I mean, at that you're taking the supernatural out of it. That's just saying that this guy was a Muay Thai fighter and like one of the best ones. You want to take him on, kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh no, that's definitely him.
And so, jumping to the end real quick, the Chang, perhaps Chang is forgiving Julian because Julian saves his daughter. Like, he has the option to kill. Like, they go, Julian and his, you know, whatever, his henchman buddy, they're there. They're at Chang's house to, towards the end, to wipe out, you know, anybody and everybody associated with Chang. And his daughter comes in, and Julian saves her by shooting the guy he came with, the other hitman, and killing him and allowing the daughter to live. Chang obviously, you know, knows that he did that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, he still doles out the punishment, but maybe it's a forgiveness thing. It's like, you're going to lose your hands. Or maybe Julian even wants him, like we were saying, you know, maybe he wants him to do that, or he suggests it, just, you know, so that there won't be any more violence. I don't know. But this movie leaves a lot up to interpretation.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, if it is only God forgives and Chang is the God character, then I guess that might make sense.
Well, the only thing that keeps throwing it, you know, because I'm like,
yeah, hey, I don't think he's God.
I'm like, if you take that as a reading out
the punishment
and say like, okay, that's
he's
it,
not
it,
forgiving.
Well, he.
It seems like
the only person who really forgives someone, it seems to me, in this movie is Julian forgiving the guy for killing his brother. Right?
Yeah.
He comes there with a gun to shoot the guy because who hired you to kill my brother? It turns out nobody. The guy killed the brother because he raped and murdered his daughter. And so Julian is like the only character that seems to have like, well, okay, not the only character. His like flaw then in some way for fitting into this criminal organization is that he has empathy, right? In two scenes in the movie, one being, you know, where he empathizes with the guy who lost his daughter, so he spares his life. And then again at the end where they've come to kill Chang and the guy says, no, we're here to kill all of them, including the little girl. And at that point, Julian makes a decision because, and I think that one's significant too, that he kills that henchman, because that seems like that guy was his buddy. Because everybody else is like a hired person who comes in and they pay off. But that guy has been around since the beginning of the movie in the boxing club. So the fact that he kills his buddy to protect the girl, that one seems like that one's more significant to that character, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You'd think he could have just talked him out of it.
Right.
Like, hey, no, we're not going to kill her.
Well, everybody seems to answer to the mother. I mean, when the mother comes on the scene, it's like she overrides everybody else.
Yeah.
In the criminal dealings, because they underscore that in a scene where they go to see, what is it, the British guy who runs the club? The
brothel.
Yeah, the brothel. When she goes to see him and hire him, she says, you know, I got a shipment coming in. And I'm like, well, what about Julian? And she's like, you know.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm in town now, so you deal with me.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
This is the second movie, because Drive has a scene set in a strip club where there's violence going on, where the women have to avert their eyes to see what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm like, a theme going on here? Mm-hmm. There's a torture scene in this movie that goes on for like 10 fucking minutes, it feels like.
It's long.
Jenny also closed her eyes.
Was it too excessive?
It was the best part of the movie. The only watchable part.
I perked up. I'm just like,
the ears is the one that got me, because you could hear. Yeah. So, maybe you should break down what happened.
Well, I mean, all the violence in the movie is, I wouldn't say, well, maybe extreme, excessive. When somebody gets slashed, you know, you see ribs broken, blood squirting out. There's people getting stabbed in the throat that opens up.
Seems to be a theme in him is. In his movies.
Yeah, the super violence.
Yes.
But this one is like, all of a sudden you're dropped into like a hostile movie or something where, I mean, it seems painful where this guy is getting these, what are those skewers for? They're all over this brothel. It's like
they were like, they're like hair.
Yeah, he took it out of some girl's hair. What you call
hair spikes.
Yeah.
You know, hair spikes
to keep the hair together.
Yeah, like it's
they're like chopsticks that you keep in
Asian
your hair.
Asian women pull them out, start eating rice. Put it in a bun, and then they use these two little. They're like chopsticks.
Yeah. I've seen them, I guess. Yeah. But,
a lot of Asian women wear them in the buns.
He puts those into the guy's arms and, you know, and is interrogating the guy. It's like, you know, who hired this hit?
And his hands kind of like where Jesus goes. Just saying.
Yeah. And then in the knees.
Yep,
and then he cuts his eyes out. And then. stabs him.
He just slits his eyes.
Slits his eyes, and then he gets like an ice pick and puts it in his ears.
That's the most horrifying part. The eyes.
Really?
Yeah. Even when we watched, even when we watched, what was it? Would you rather?
Yeah.
Or they cut his eye. Like that's the. Can you imagine being alive and getting your eye just? Can you imagine that?
Oh, I believed it when this guy was screaming. You know, it's like that's probably you know what it would be like. You had the pain level or the intensity of getting somebody you know holding your head and slicing your.
And you need to watch. Is it the Salvador Dali movie?
Yeah,
they do that.
With the
Ancient Andalou.
Yeah,
yeah,
that one's probably the worst because they have some sort of prosthetic and they show the razor slice into the eyball.
Or you can watch Zombie.
Yeah, I was thinking Zombie.
Nice eye effect in there.
Oh,
yeah, that'll get you. Wood.
Probably ocular trauma. Is it too excessive for this movie, or is it in keeping with the style of this movie?
This movie, like, it's. I was watching it thinking, like, is this, like, it is, it's very stylized, but, like, it's a bleak portrayal of Bangkok and or the underbelly of it, right? And I think that the scenes of violence, not that they're refreshing, but there's actual action and movement going on. Yeah. Like, it's not something up you don't have to interpret it. Like, it's happening, and it's, you know, for the most part, it's super violent and like I think with our culture Americans we're used to you know that level of violence. Maybe this is a little bit more on the torture side and it might be a little bit more in your face and kind of it doesn't the camera never pans away. I think we're used to more panning away in our movies.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I don't think it was too much. Not for this movie, because this is a bleak fucking movie. This is like as beautiful as it looks, you know, with the colors and the photography.
Yeah.
It's just like, ugh. It just feels seedy and dirty. Mm-hmm. Like everything about it feels dirty.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, like you were saying, it's a very beautiful movie using, you know, I mean, because it's.
Neon will do that.
The upsides to films, you know, you get to travel around the world kind of virtually and see different, you know, cities or areas of cities. Even if you were a tourist there, you'd never go to these places, you know, and movies are able to take you there and you see Bangkok, you know, from like above. And then once it gets down to like street level, it, you know, it starts to get a little grimy and then it moves into like the alleys and, you know, where people are living with, you know, well-hung dogs, you know, it just keeps on like deteriorating. But I think at the same time you see like, you know, where Crystal's staying, you know, in like the best hotel and, you know, so you kind of have this, you know, I guess it's a wide spectrum of like what, you know, life in this Oriental city is like.
Sure.
Know? Yeah. Because we don't see this in a whole lot of other movies. I mean, you know, you just don't. Nobody sets anything in Thailand.
Well, and just the culture of the city, it feels like, I mean, for someone from Finland? Norway?
Denmark.
Denmark, sorry. Somebody from Denmark to write this movie, it feels like he had to have spent time, you know, like a considerable amount of time within the culture of this.
I think city. When you're on that side of the world, I think you do tend to visit more places because, I mean, mostly everything's a fucking train ride away, you know, everything. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely easier.
That's true.
Yeah. Why is every movie about Thailand about fucking kickboxing? Like, they don't do anything else there?
Prostitutes.
Dude. Yeah, and prostitutes.
Yeah. The number one export, dude. That's all they do kicks. There.
Lady boys and fucking Muay Thai.
Is it because...
He even had to ask, are they all women? 50%.
He did.
Did he say 50%?
You brought it up before the movie, and they asked the question in the movie.
There's going to be lady boys. It's Thailand. Where else? Of course there's going to be lady boys. I'm shocked we didn't see one.
Was it just, you know, because I saw, what was the other thing, like Skin Trade or whatever, the Dolph Lundgren, Tony Jaa movie. Maybe that was the Philippines, but you're still in the same, you know, area of the world. And it seems like you get into these, you know, maybe it's just... Anytime you're doing like an action or a thriller movie or something that takes place with crime, you know, as being this might be a good setting for a dramatic story, that you're going to end up like setting it in They never send, like, you know, who would it be? Keanu Reeves and so-and-so to Bangkok to have, well, like, you know, like, whatever, the English Patient.
Was it Mission Impossible, the third one, maybe? They were somewhere like that. But it's always, like, it's the Hollywood version of it. It's, like, this feels, like, really, like, what Bangkok is probably like.
Except with the lights. Or the neon helps it. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, the stuff on the street, I think, is really like that. I mean, the stuff indoors, I don't know, if like, it seems like everywhere they went was red and blue and like long hallways and just everywhere they went, it felt like we were in a apartment building. Like, even if it was
a Dario Argento movie. You were in a Dario Argento movie.
See, that's what I seriously when I saw it, that was part of the appeal.
It's exactly what it is. It's red, like, blue, yellow, green,
but it's a different, it's like an extension of Argento. It's not like, you know, it's not like mimicry of it, right? It's like taking it to the next level. He's not using the same type of color palette.
Here's Dredd. I don't know. No, that's the same color palette. That's fucking Suspiria, well, right? No, there.
I was looking at the whatever, the patterns on the wall, like the wallpaper patterns. I'm like, black and white wallpaper patterns and colored lights.
That's all Suspiria. I say this movie's Suspiria.
But it's got like these awesome, you know, like, in the club where Chang sings karaoke, which is also something that's just odd.
Jeez, multiple times.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that's full song. Worship service, you know, happening.
No, it's that part of the world. Everybody sings,
I think,
karaoke.
He orders all those police to be here.
Yeah.
It's like, you will come and watch and sing karaoke.
Right?
Yeah.
But it has these red lanterns, like, all on across the entire ceiling. Yeah. It's got like Christmas lights up and down the side and these red and harsh red and blue lights. It's just really cool looking. And you're like, what the hell am I looking at? Even when they go to a place that's not lit with the, you know, unnatural color scheme, like
a restaurant, maybe?
No, I was thinking, well, no, even that has like, it's all red
in the
and
background.
Gold.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the guy who planned the hit and the like retarded kid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And like, it's like some sort of, it's like a junkyard or something.
But everything's hung from the ceiling.
Yeah.
You know, which is really kind of weird. Actually, now I'm thinking about it, there's a river right outside that place. You put everything on the ceiling so it doesn't,
flood. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a unique visual look. You know, when you see it, you're like, what in the hell? Holy hell. Why is everything like hanging from the ceiling that you usually expect to see on the floor?
Yeah.
I don't know.
They're just more efficient.
Yeah.
Cleaner. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Let me think. Is that, have we already cleared out Only God Forgives at like a half hour?
Maybe.
Well,
pacing.
I mean, I've got it.
The pacing of it is just like
fucking like
glacial.
Yes,
it's like sitting on a hot pan. And like, how long? I'm going to put in this 90-minute movie. Like, all right, this shouldn't be a problem. While you sit on this hot frying pan,
it
just feels that way. Everybody crawls through the scene. This is why I just don't get the point. Like, this movie could have been a half an hour long. It could have been if everybody walked and talked normal. Everybody, like, I just don't fucking get it. I just don't fucking get this type of filmmaking.
Yeah, there's not until the later half of the movie do people actually start maybe.
Well, the mother.
Kind of conversing in a way.
The mother's the
up,
only
yeah.
character in this fucking
conversing
movie. It's like realistic
way.
At all. Or you acting. Know? And, except and, for the whole, like, yeah. your brother has a bigger cock than you. That was a little. But still, like, I don't know. Everything just moves so slow. It is almost like a filmmaker that doesn't want a script. And he's just like, walk here. Slower. Slower.
I'm just going to put it all on Gosling's face.
Move your head a little. Okay, I'll do it a little slower. That's like, what do you want me to do here?
Slow.
Just whatever you do, just do it slower.
Just don't move. Just be very still.
You moved your eyebrows a little bit there. Look to the left. I can't have you emote any facial expressions. You're this guy who looks at his hands. Go. Yeah. Slower.
Okay, so I guess that's the question then. It's deliberate. If nothing yes. else, like,
but
it was
Drive is the same way.
Purpose.
He does that. That's this guy, right? Well, he thinks it's genius. Like, I know, I will have this guy not say anything. He'll do nothing.
But why?
Yeah, I don't know why. I'm not trying to figure out this guy. I don't like this filmmaker. I don't care about why. He just sucks. Or I think that's stupid. personally.
Everybody has to do something. My character will do nothing.
He'll do nothing. I'm the greatest filmmaker in all Denmark. I don't know.
The greatest Mexican filmmaker
in all Denmark? Yeah. Hey, Cabron. Yeah, I just don't get it, though. I just, it is almost like those, I don't know, I guess what I would imagine. Yeah, I don't know.
Not to change the pacing subject, but for some reason that made me think of, it's interesting that this movie is like a normal film would, like, that's about a family that runs drugs or is, you know, deals drugs or has a big crime circuit in Bangkok. It would be about that, but it's not. I mean, it's about this, it's all about, you know, getting revenge on these people that, you know, killed his brother or their her son. It's the drugs don't really come into it. I mean, other than like they make a couple mentions of it, but that's not why they're people are killing people. It's because his brother, you know, killed this prostitute and then he got killed by her dad. And that's really what the whole thing is about, which is,
it's really about a guy who wanders around, looks at his hands while his mother tries to like backdoor him to like trying to kill the cop while the cop is actively looking for who set up this hit on me, you know, while this guy looks at his hands. Fuck, is stupid. He can't forgive himself. That's why only God forgives, is because he can't forgive himself.
There you go.
But it's just like, I just don't buy this character, you know? I just, I don't know. What did they say about him killing his dad? I was asleep by his dad.
Just killed him with his bare hands.
Yeah, well, I mentioned it twice.
But why? Did they say why?
Well,
was it so he could fuck his mother?
Mom asked him to.
Yeah, she said, I only asked you to do this once before. You know, so I'm going to ask you, but I need you to do it again. So he won't hurt me. Kill this guy, Chang, or whatever. Kill
this cop. His dad, like, beat his mom, so he...
Something. So she used him as the instrument of killing her husband. And then, so that's fucked him up, you know, for the rest of his life. And now, yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I guess, see, that's where when I read, you know, when you're watching it, it's like, it does feel like there's something there. And even this guy, because he doesn't say a whole lot, it still feels like, and I guess it's a tribute to the acting, you know, or lack of, or whatever, the stillness of the performance. It feels like there's shit going on below the surface.
Just because he slightly turns his head a little bit, but that's what he looked like in Drive. Are they the same character? Is it a reoccurring character that this guy writes? I just don't get it.
I think this is more of a reoccurrence of the character in Valhalla Rising for sure.
Yeah, same thing. There's with something. That movie.
Yeah, that seems more linked than the guy in Drive.
Well, Drive is the. I mean, this is a foreign film.
Yeah.
Drive is the American version. Like, if we were to split what he made an American movie in Drive. He took his sensibilities and made what more elements of an American.
Yeah, more Hollywood.
Yeah, it was more Hollywood, but more.
This is more Bollywood?
Drive is
Hollywood, this is Bollywood.
This makes sense as more like that was the American version of his way of directing. This is definitely a foreign film. To me.
Especially if you're just going to do a revenge movie, right? Like, those are very simple fucking movies to make. Those artistic is jumping the shark to my ass. It's just like, why? Why is... Wait, because to me, it's like, well, we didn't really have story. Because, I mean, you got a little bit of story in here, but we need to, like, fill time with people entering and leaving scenes really slow. So you know everyone has a chip on their shoulder. Who walks around? People just don't walk around like that, like zombies. I just find it... I don't know what it is.
I guess that's what I'm still trying to crack, because I don't have an answer for that. Yeah. You know, it feels like I have a handle on, but that's like, you know, I see Chang come home. He's got like five fucking steps he's got to go off. He takes each shoe off and then walks one step at a time, you know, at this measured pace.
So you think a lot about it. I think that's what it is. It gives you time to just think, what's he doing? What's he doing? I'm not doing anything. I'm just telling this guy to walk slow.
I guess to watch and just to see and for, you know, the extension of it. I was actually having this thought while I was up in the bathroom. I'm like,
me too.
We're all great thoughts
thinking done
about this movie.
Yeah, I was thinking that, like, you know, I have some kind of attraction to movies that move at a slower than normal pace, right? Like other movies, I just watched The Martian today, and like there's a lot happening in that movie, and it feels like every other movie that you watch, but by its pace. It's the expected pace of a Hollywood film. And somehow I like it when they slow things down, and it's like now you're just going to actually sit there and watch these things happen, and you do have time to think about what you're seeing and contemplate.
But that's, you know. I mean, that's a painting on the wall, right? I mean, that might as well be. That's just a different form of art. It seems like with our society, and yeah, I mean, I guess you can do it in film, but the whole, like, it's...
That's what this movie is, just a bunch of paintings.
It's silent filmmaking. It's,
yeah. Where, like, you know, I mean, it's beautiful, and it's...
Saying something.
It's saying something, but it's... And it's saying something to you, yes, specifically, Colin, where, like, I mean, and maybe, who knows, we'll find out in wrap-ups what everyone thinks, but I think that also it's, like, a piece of art, you know, that... That's you can I would liken it to a piece of art more than I would a film.
But is it deep enough to be considered art? Because I think I don't care if he stares at his hands because he feels guilty, but like that's not a deep enough subject for me to want to watch people walk slowly and look at things.
It is to Colin, where you know maybe something else might. Well,
but that's what I'm at. Why is that interesting? Why just him? If he's self-reflect, just why does that need to be "quote unquote art"? If all it is a guy who's thinking, whatever, he's, oh, I feel bad about what I did. Why is that topic? Because I just don't feel like it's a deep enough topic to be art.
Well, right, because it's. I mean, we're saying it's a revenge story, and that's a simple story, and they just expand it out longer than it needs to be. But there's something. I mean, now we're saying, you know. As you were talking about, you're saying like we, as, you know, are assuming that, you know, the hands mean this and whatever. So it's like we've solved it or whatever. We've assigned a meaning to this symbol, and so now we can look.
And it's
back
our and meaning, talk. Which even makes right. it more pointless,
right? or that's what actually gives it something. It's our meaning. We took something out of this is going to be different than the next guy who watches it, kind of thing. So it becomes like our version of the movie, and I think in some way, so it's interactive, I guess. In that way, right?
But what if you're completely fucking wrong? And then, like,
but who's going to tell me that I'm wrong?
Well, but I don't know. Like, I guess it doesn't matter to me. I guess if a filmmaker isn't like clear enough to tell you what his meaning is,
perfectly, it's like looking at a painting. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty much the.
Well,
perfect
but is it one of those paintings where someone just like slops a bunch of shit and they're like, "It's called Chicken and a Hailstorm," mm-hmm. and it's just like, what the fuck is it though?
Copyright 2016.
I don't think
Saturday Night Freak Show, Chicken right. and a Hailstorm.
It's just like I just don't
well,
think.
Well, I guess that's the question. Right? I mean, you can't tell if a guy is just fucking around and putting like a bunch of random stuff.
I always tell the story of this
guy who made it. Fucking with
I always tell the story of this this musician I went to Afghanistan with, and he said these lyrics. I was like, well, these are interesting lyrics. What do they mean? He goes, what do they mean to you? I was like, oh, they don't mean a fucking thing. You just strung a bunch of words together that sounds really deep, and then you want people to walk away with something. But you, the fucking artist, have nothing except for a facsimile of what a poem is or something. And so I always look at that. When I look at movies like this, I don't like to assign meaning to things unless they can truly tell me what the meaning is, because I just feel like, I don't know, the guy could just be like, and he looks at his hands, and blood comes out of the faucet on his hand. It's just like fucking shit.
Yeah, but it checks out.
But right? It doesn't matter if it checks out. It's just like, it's unimportant. Like okay, like in, you know, movies like Ray, right? Whenever they do one of these autobiography, like music movies, like Dragon, right? Where they have to come up with this really stupid symbolism for something, right? I'm packing my bags and I feel the dead foot of my brother in the water from him drowning. You know, it's just like, yeah, did Ray Charles really walk around like... feeling his fucking like dead, his dead drowned brother in his fucking lawn. Like, it just.
Well, isn't it?
I mean, it's mental masturbation.
Well, it kind of goes back to the idea of like what cinema is, right? I mean, earlier we were talking about this is kind of like silent cinema. You're telling a story by putting pictures together. You're trying to communicate an idea through an image, right? So you're trying to convey what Ray is. Felt it, you know, multiple times in his life, but we've got 2 hours or whatever to convey this. How do we convey it quickly? We choose a symbol or a metaphor that we assign that meaning to, and then when you see it, you're like, every time you see it during the movie, the fucking Indian and the Doors, you know, or whatever, it's like it has a standard.
Well, but then I would say, like, the people that watch, like, Kubrick can find fucking Apollo 11 like conspiracy shit. Well, then they're right. They're 100% right, because they can look and be like, see, man, all those Indian cans were not, they were all facing different directions, but in that one scene, they're all looking at us. So what Kubrick's really saying is that the Indian, we stole the nation from the Indian. You know, it's just like, fuck, really? Is that what he's saying? Like, I don't know. Yeah, I see some like buffalo pictures on the wall in The Shining, but is he trying to tell me that we took this land from the Indians? I don't fucking know. I can't talk to him.
I suppose that's why The Shining becomes like this thing that has endured for so many years, because people can look at it. It's like a Rorschach.
All they're doing is saying, what's it about? This is what I think. What's it about? This is what I... But no one's pinpointing it.
No, but that's... Isn't that why those movies live on longer than like Moving Violation?
See, I don't... I wouldn't say so, because I don't think like today's generation is watching.
You've never heard of it because it went, you know, came out and went away.
But I'm saying, I don't think today's generation is watching The Shining. You know what I'm saying? They're not. They're not dissecting that shit. They're just...
Still seems to be an awful lot of talk about it. Like,
it's because film schools keep perpetuating this. This is what you should watch, because this is what we say is genius and what you should listen to.
The Shining is on Netflix starting today, or like last week. But listener,
really?
Yeah, I got an email today.
I mean, fuck. When I was in the army in like my quote unquote film school, this one Marine guy. Oh yeah, of course, Kubrick is his favorite. I'm like, no shit, really. Your favorite director. I'm shocked. You like movies and Stanley Kubrick's your favorite director. Blows my mind. So I don't know. I just don't like... It's not that I don't like symbolism in movies. I just don't think it needs to be shoved down your fucking throat like this guy does it. It's just like, what's this mean? He's sticking his hands in her face. It's like... So you're stepping out of every point of reality just to fucking give me something that I still have to be like, well, what the fuck does that mean? Like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I guess this is kind of going to what you're saying, but, you know, it's the idea of assigning interpretations to movies. The movie then means something to you. And then, you know, if it doesn't mean that to the filmmaker, does that negate your impression of the movie? And a prime example of this that I've always had was Ridley Scott and Blade Runner. I've seen Blade Runner a bunch of times, love the movie, and I take out of it a meaning, right? Hey, wait, have you seen it? Am I going to ruin this by spoilers?
I don't like it.
I don't care for it either.
So the whole idea that Deckard is this cop who's been pulled out of retirement to chase these replicants down, that's how I've always seen it. This is a movie about a human, and he's dealing with these inhuman creations. And then Ridley Scott goes, you know, well, let's Deckard's
fuck with it 20 times.
He has said,
yeah,
in interviews that Deckard is a replicant. That doesn't mesh with the way I've seen the movie the whole time that I've ever seen it. Mm. So this way, the filmmaker actually telling me what he intended fucked my version of
right.
So I guess that's maybe why.
But in the book, wasn't Decker a replicant? Pretty sure, right? In the actual Android's Dream of Electric Sheep?
I don't think so. I think he made that.
That's why it's titled that, right? Android's Dream of Electric Sheep, right?
Yeah, but he's talking about the replicants, isn't he?
Yeah. You tell me.
But I think that's why.
You tell me.
I think that's why, in some cases, it is valid to have something where, like The Shining, or like this, or you know, those type of movies where you set something up and you go, or a David Lynch movie. It's like you watch it and you take something away from it, and then you'll talk to the guy next to you and tell him, and they're like, I didn't fucking see that at all. I saw this. Did you both like the movie? You know, I guess is one of the questions. But if you did and you saw two different movies, who's to say which one is wrong, right?
Mm. Right.
So I think too much of a concrete explanation in some ways does, I don't know, it somehow literalizes movies. And then it's like, well, then, okay.
But I think to have a narrative.
I watched it. It's done. It's solved. And no, I don't have.
But I think to have a narrative, you need some.
Whatchamacallit. You could throw them away more easily.
Right.
See, I think I could throw this away more easily because, like I said, it doesn't stand on its own as a movie that you can just, oh, it's about da 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 da. It's all the, oh, look at this. What does that mean? It's just like, fuck, the whole thing's just, it's just images. At that point, it's not a narrative. It's just images. And then like, what is the, you decide the narrative. It's like, well, fuck, that wasn't my job. You made the movie. You decide the fucking narrative. Show me. You know, like, I don't know. Not that it's not fun to, like I said, it's not, there's plenty of movies. I want to show adaptation, and I've got a take on adaptation that I'm pretty sure most people think when they see the movie, but I'm not sure. But, you know, so it's not that I don't like movies that do that. I just don't like movies that only try to be that and really don't try to be like a normal fucking movie at all.
Well, maybe that's a good place to go to Igor's mailbag. Wait, do we have anything left? Anybody on Only God Forgives? Only God Forgives? Igor, where are you at, sir?
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
And thank you, Igor. As always, you can comment on facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show, and we'll read your comment on the air. We got a comment from Jonathan Kehoe about Only God Forgives. Thanks for writing in, Jonathan. We asked him.
Thanks, John.
Or I just posted the question, what was your favorite of Ruffin's movies, and what'd you think of this one? He said Drive was his favorite. He's heard bad things about this one, but he's going to have to check it out.
We'll see.
I think if you like Drive, you'll probably like this.
But we're going to find out
about that. Ryan Gosling says nothing and looks nothing.
That's not true.
All right, so wrap-ups start with Brent.
No, that's, Brent. That's true. Whether seeing one makes you like the other one offhand.
All right. Right.
Well, yeah. You know, I really liked Drive when I saw it, and I think that it is strange. I think that because this came out after Drive, right? Mm-hmm. So this was something that, like, Drive put Refn on the map. And I haven't gone back and seen any of his other stuff, but from speaking with Colin, it sounds like a lot of his other stuff is more like Only God Forgives than it is. Yeah, it
seems like Drive's the anomaly.
Like, yeah, and I think, yeah, we probably...
Well, I don't know. We saw that Pusher thing in that, or the trailer. That looks more like a straight ahead.
But did he direct that, or was that pretty...
He did the original three...
Oh, part. He did.
Okay. It's three movies, Pusher 1, 2, and 3.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know, because I like Drive so much, and I just don't like Travis is saying, I can't wrap my head around it. I mean, I think that we have a loose outline of what he was going for, but it's pretty loose. I think that maybe with more viewings, I could get it, but I just don't want to sit.
Yeah.
I'd have to cut my eyelids off just to.
I guess that copy you own is getting thrown in the trash.
Well,
eBay.
I mean, it's something.
Come on.
I know it's only 90 minutes, but man, it feels like 3 hours. And it's the stagnant, characters that are blocking. It's something like nobody moves throughout this whole film, and when they do, they kill somebody, which I mean, that's all well and good, but it's just like these characters, I don't like them. I can't relate to anybody in this movie. It's foreign. I mean, it's American, it's foreign. It's foreign.
That's one of them foreign movies.
That's not why I didn't like it. Not because I had to read a little bit. but I guess I showed my hand there. The thing is, I get frustrated with just staring at, like, I mean, maybe the ladies out there like staring at Ryan Gosling, but I can't do it for like 10 minutes, you know, where he doesn't do anything. he's just standing there, or, you know, whoever it may be.
He looks hurt inside.
He's got the sad eyes for sure. I don't know. I mean, I was excited about this film. I really wanted to see it when I first heard about it, but I think that if you're going to, you know, it depends on who you are out there, but I would say if you want to see a Nicholas Winding Refn film, see Drive. If you're from this country, Dom, maybe you'll like, I don't know how Australians are, but maybe you'll like this better, or maybe somebody out there will have the same, see something in it that Colin sees. I respect it from like a technical achievement. I think that it looks good. It looks really good. A lot of the compositions kind of remind me of Kubrick a little bit, I mean, some centering of the characters, which I always appreciate that. You do get a good taste of the city of Bangkok. I mean, from highest from like the fanciest to the lowest lows, you know, the seedy underbelly of the city. It's all there.
Yeah, this is not a promotional film for.
But they never are, right?
I mean, like, see the seedy side of
yeah,
Bangkok.
Bangkok Cobra.
With Burma.
Whatever. That whole place.
I don't know. I would like to. I can't. I mean, I would say, you know, I would skip this one. Unless you have a lot of patience. A lot of patience. But yeah, I don't know. I can't recommend it on good conscience.
All right. Yeah, I also can't recommend this movie. I thought it was pretty boring. I did stay awake, though.
You did it.
I did it. I made a liar out of Colin because he predicted that I was going to be asleep within the first half hour. But it was very boring and drawn out. I think it had moments of potential to be better, and it just didn't. So, yeah, I'm going to pass on this one, too.
excuse me. It's a very pretty movie. I think Brent kind of pegged it when he said to me, it's like it is like looking at a painting. But it's, I think if you were to use that to look at other movies, like other movies are just one big painting with many brush strokes. This feels like it's multiple paintings just lined up together, and you can get meaning out of looking at specific ones, but maybe they don't all connect to each other. I don't know if that makes sense to anybody else but me, but that's how it feels to me. I can't recommend it. Yeah, other than it being pretty, I couldn't sit through that again. Yeah, I'll stick with Drive. And I'm not excited to see another, or at least written by, Refn movie.
That's the Neon
Demon coming out
in 2016.
I don't know if that's going to be on my list of be like, oh, I must see it.
Is Ryan Gosling in that?
Yes. Oh, is it Keanu Reeves?
Oh, fuck. Great.
An L fan.
Is it written by him?
He might not say anything.
I'll look at it, but I'm not excited to see his next work, I don't think. I'll stick with Drive. I can't recommend this one. If you're a Refn fan, you've seen like the Pusher trilogy and everything else, then yeah, you should see it. But I can't recommend it.
You know, to a lot of like, I don't even know what you want to call it, film purists, I guess what I'm about to say would be like fucking sacrilege. But it's like, you know, the reason we had silent films is because we had no options, right? So you had silent films, so people, you know, no one needed dialogue or even writing. That's when people really just watched what the characters were doing, and they got the story out of literally just looking at the pictures, right? But then we've got all these tools, and you know, filmmaking. I think filmmaking has to change in that way, right? With new technology or new, like, it adds to the story. Not that you can't use elements of the past, but I think you do get to a point where it's just like you can't have a fucking silent movie. You just really can't. Not that, I don't know, it just moves too slow. It just like, yeah, and especially like, I don't know, you can either have Scarface or you can have fucking, you know, an art house movie. I don't think you can do Scarface art house. I just think they're, because, okay, number one, I don't believe Ryan Gosling's like, I don't think such a sensitive character would make it in that world. It just doesn't seem like it fits, you know? It just doesn't seem like, I don't know, it just, I mean, same thing with Drive. Really, I kind of have a very weird conservative problem with movies in general that are built around pretty horrible people. Like in Drive, I thought, it's like, well, this is a horrible person. He's a fucking, like, criminal driver that's trying to fuck this guy's wife while his husband's, I don't feel anything for this fucking dude.
But not at the end. It's about a monster.
That shows how much of a pussy whip guy he is. He'd be like, okay, your husband's out. I'll still drive.
At the end, he's not a horrible person.
Oh, why not?
He's a hero at the end of the movie. He made a self-sacrifice.
But that doesn't mean he still can't be a criminal driver, right? He's just, there's a difference between being a like a hero in the audience's eyes and being a hero in the moral view of it, I guess, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, this movie, it looks beautiful. I mean, really fucking beautiful. There's the scene where, how do I even fucking describe it? It's a goddamn picture. It's like,
you'd have to see it. To
well, because it's just literally a picture. I could be like Ryan Gosling standing there in daylight. It's framed almost like it's a 4x3 image because you got the doors on, you know. And then he's looking at another dude who's framed by doors, and it's a slightly slender image. Mm-hmm. It's like that's right there is what I'm talking about. It's like those are fucking beautiful images, right? But like. That doesn't make a movie to me. Movies are editing. They are movement. They're pacing. They're script. They're dialogue. They're all these things, not just one or two elements of these things. Yes, you can have lighting. You can have you know, blah, blah, blah. If you let all the, if you don't pay any attention to the other things, you know, it's only going to be as good as whatever. Cause I really did find the fucking like the killer cop guy really intriguing, you know, that character really intrigued me, but you didn't get to know anything about him. It's like, okay, cool, whatever, takes a sword, does shit, okay, cool, nothing else to tell, okay, all right, like, fuck, there's no story in this. Just I'm gonna walk to my house, slowly enter my house, say hello to my daughter, put my sword on the thing
and pull a sword out of my soul.
Yeah, cool. Cool, but it doesn't tell me fucking shit. It doesn't, like, and some things there's not even, like, clues to it, right? You could watch this a billion times and you're like, even if he was the old boxer guy, doesn't mean, well, what made him decide to become a cop and start fucking chopping people's arms off? What made him start being this, like, this balancing scale of good and evil or whatever, right? So, I mean, yeah, I don't recommend any of this guy's movies. Like Valhalla Rising Dry. I'm the anti this fucking guy. I just am. Like, I even hate Ryan Gosling because of this type of movies. I hate him. Like, when I saw that Nice Guys trailer, I'm like, if Ryan Gosling wasn't in it. All because of these silent fucking pretentious roles. Ugh.
Should see the movie he directed, Lost River.
Oh, Jesus, good name.
Well, that's...
It's his soul or
something along the lines of this.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah. Shocker.
It's a movie that's full of symbols and long passages. I mean, I got to address a bunch of stuff. I mean, I'm a fan of Ryan Gosling only in the movies that I've seen him in, if that makes any sense. Yeah. But his filmography, I appreciate the fact that, like, we've got this guy who's, like, a good actor who's mm-hmm. been coming up through the ranks and hasn't really gone, you know, into big budget Hollywood stuff. You know, he's, like, still striking that kind of, I'm going to do movies that satisfy, you know, himself kind of thing. Mm. Kind of like, what you got, like Saoirse Ronan or somebody like that is like the female version. You know, like, she's a good actress, but she's never appeared in like some big blockbuster thing that I can tell off the bat. I don't know. I mean, there's something about this movie specifically that does speak to me. And I mean, you know, the first time I saw it, I can only explain the experience as being transfixing or hypnotic, right? The use of the music, Cliff Martinez's music, the editing, the rhythm, the style, which I think is technically flawless. I mean, like what this guy is doing with his camera and the way that he moves stuff around is like, you know, aces. You know, the story does appeal to me as like, you know, it's basically a B movie story that's made somehow more interesting by the use of the symbols to explain an interior life of the character. I'm not saying everybody should do this, and I'm not saying that it's always successful, even in this movie, right? But somehow, I don't know, that just appeals to me. And like, it's one of those like wavelength movies where you're like, you sit there and you watch it, and it's like you experience it, I guess, more than you know. No, not like pay attention to it, you know, because you are like drawing stuff in. But it's like a Terrence Malick movie, right? Or something where you sit and you kind of dream while you're watching the movie because there's enough time in between cuts where you can, it like envelops you in some very strange way. And that I just find, you know, interesting. I don't like it when everybody does it, but I like it when Refn does it. I mean, now having seen three of his movies, and I'm not saying I'm going to go run out tomorrow and go see Bronson. Obviously, I've known that, you know, Pusher and Bronson and all that have been around forever and haven't really felt the desire because those
subjects. Bronson?
Yeah.
Directed Bronson?
Uh-huh. That was the first one, I think, that quote unquote, well, Pusher put him on the map in Denmark. Bronson put him on the map internationally. Bronson was a thing
that, yeah.
And then I think Drive, like, made him this huge overnight success where it's like, you know, that's when Hollywood comes calling and Hollywood goes, well, you know, what, you know, I mean, the career path of the indie filmmaker is James Wan makes Saw. He makes Insidious. Then he moves up to making The Conjuring and then he goes to Furious 7. Right. So at somewhere along the line that had to have been offered to Refn after Drive. I'm sure there was an offer here. Read this script and whatever.
He just didn't want to go to the pedophile gay sex ring that you have to.
Yeah, he said, no, I'm going to. Well, I mean, I think probably. I mean, this is just conjecture, right? I don't fucking know the guy, but I'm just like, probably because of the spotlight, I imagine, in Copenhagen, Denmark, there's like, who else fucking comes from, you know, you got you and Lars von Trier, basically. So you can't be like the guy who directs Furious 8. You have to be another, you know, filmmaker. So he's off charting his own path, and he goes and he makes Only God Forgives, which is it's a personal movie to him, I feel, that he is trying to communicate something maybe experimentally in a style that he's trying to develop, which is like, that's what's interesting about cinema, I guess, in some ways, right? The fact that, you know, where everything else does kind of look the same, it's like, I'm not going to see another movie like this until he makes another movie. I mean, last week we watched Celebrity. I think the same thing applies to Woody Allen. You know, you're not going to see another Woody Allen movie until he makes one. That's important, I think, in cinema. And I think, you know, the way that, you know, we talk about pace and putting things together and making movies that are not entirely silent. But, you know, you look back at like Alfred Hitchcock and, you know, the way that that guy used editing and told stories without dialogue, Brian De Palma. But
you didn't need to guess anything Hitchcock was doing. He fucking tells, he shows you. I mean, that all that brilliance is in show how he shows you, right?
Yeah. Well, no, he doesn't leave he's not working with, I don't think, so much symbolism and metaphor for psychological. That doesn't sound right either. But you know what I'm saying? Like, to try and imply a psychological depth to his characters, Refn is using like the symbols of the hands. What do the hands stand for? It's like you got to work that shit out yourself in order to figure out, you know, what's there. But then when it's there, it's like you watch the movie and it is a full narrative. I mean, it does feel like it's a full, you know, film. It doesn't feel like there's pieces missing. It's like it's there. And, you know, I think that is a taste-based thing that, you know, some people will be, you know, on the wavelength of it, and it's going to leave other people cold. I guess that's why you say it's not a commercial movie, you know? You make a movie that's going to appeal to the mass audience, or this one's going to appeal to, like, three people, you know, more than that. But I think for that, it's interesting, for sure. And I think that deserves a recommendation from me anyway, because it's an interesting blot on the, you know, timeline of film. And I think that's kind of what makes, you know, looking into movies, you know, kind of an adventure to keep you from just kind of like, oh God, I'm so bored with watching movies. If it's the same stale thing all the time, it's like sometimes these things pop up and they're like, what in the holy fuck is that? And then, you know, that's, I guess, where my appeal is to the thing. So, and I think, you know, probably I'm thinking now, right? I'm predicting 5 years from now, we're going to have to check and see if like anybody's talking about this movie or if it's completely, you know, if they revisit it, if you see like analyses and blogs and stuff like that. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe it'll just get swept under the rug, but we'll see. So anyway, that's Only God Forgives on the Saturday Night Freak Show. And next week, Jenny's up. Jenny, what are we going to watch?
We are going to watch The Princess Bride.
Inconceivable.
Inconceivable.
That's a good one. So that's next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show. And until then, the basement is going dark.